You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 20 August. We got local July inflation data due 10 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments. The BHP Group results. Profits to a five-year low, although maybe that's a little unfair. Scott Cummins from Avenge on results. Those troublesome projects saw them swing into a loss for the period. And then Brad Bendel from Better Bond. Strong July's activity in the home loan market and shifts. Homeowners are upgrading, perhaps, rather than buying up. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlip Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, zero cranes in Sandton CBD, tells the story of Joburg's decline. The days of multiple cranes across the Sandton skyline are far gone. Business Day, U.S. proxy advisory firm opposes re-election of Richmond's Rupert. International Shareholder Services recommends voting against Chair Johan Rupert and board member Anton Rupert. Morning markets, the U.S. was red, S&P down 0.6%, NASDAQ off 1.4%. The East is mostly red, Sydney a couple of points higher, 0.02%. Tokyo is off 1.5%, Hong Kong 0.5% lower, and Tencent off 0.7%. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, $3,359. Brent, $65.94. Platinum, $1,311. Palladium, $1,105. The Rand is 17.72. Bitcoin, $113,500. Top 40 opening call, red open, just over 500 points or 0.5% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. BHP Group, HEPS down 7%, revenue off 8%, lowest dividend since 2017, profits, as I said in the intro, at five-year lows back to 2020. Are they just in the wrong commodities? Because gold miners are telling us a different story. Of course, they've got some coal, they've got iron ore, they're focusing on copper. You're thinking on those, on these results.
Yeah, so I mean, BHP is an industrial commodities, right? So they really are very exposed to economic cycles. When you look at something like gold, for example, you've got the benefit of safe haven demand, which means that it's almost economic cycle agnostic, or even to a certain extent responds well when there's uncertainty abound and there's pressure on consumer and business confidence, for example. So BHP is not exposed to gold, but exposed to industrial commodities, and very specifically so. They still believe in the long-term China and India growth stories. Iron ore is very important for that. Steelmaking coal is very important for that. And of course, copper, the metal of the future, and a key AI enabler, a key renewable energy and battery or EV enabler as well. So I think they're in the right commodities. It's just a really difficult part of the cycle. And in light of that, I think the results were actually pretty great. And just an interesting thing to note, this company actually missed expectations on revenue and earnings, and you saw the share price tick up slightly. It goes to show the long-term confidence is still there in this company.
That's actually a great point. And their CapEx spend, I mean, I think they're moving it over $10 billion over the next 2 years. They've been spending a huge amount. This perhaps is more about the future than what's been happening. To your point, these industrial commodities, the demand might not be there right now, but it is going to be there in the future. They are in the right commodities.
Yeah, and you can tell a lot from the tone of a statement release, even if it's written. So obviously, if you listen to management, you'll hear that they're quite upbeat. But even the written commentary, the way that they put they put out their plans, it just makes so much sense, and there's so much confidence underlying that. So the market didn't mind that they are pushing up CapEx. The market didn't mind that they decided to increase their long-term debt target. The market sees that as a sign of confidence. Another sign of confidence, of course, also increasing their dividend payout ratio, which at this point in the cycle is quite rare, and it was very well received.
Do they still need Anglo American? Because, of course, it was last year when they made that offer. Anglo American is now cleaned up to a degree. Still got De Beers, got rid of the platinum stuff. Do they still need them?
Well, I mean, they still have the balance sheet capacity for it, and it'll be they're looking for those copper assets, right? It will fit in very, very well with BHP's portfolio. I don't think they need it. It'll be interesting to see if they still want it. They certainly can buy it if they want.
Yeah, I mean, they shook it up last year. Anglo perhaps looking better, and if they wanted it then, surely now maybe they want it even more. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Always appreciate the early morning. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Scott Cummins, CEO of Avenge. Results of the year ending June saw revenue down 13.9%. Headline loss per share at 64.6 Australian cents. Scott, appreciate the time today. Heavy losses, almost 100 million Australian dollars on two particular projects that you've got, Southeast Asia and Australia. Talk us through the process. Are the financial challenges here behind you? Is there more to come? Because it's quite a significant hit.
Yes, good to talk to you again, Simon. Yes, look, it's obviously an overall disappointing year to record that loss, but as you rightly say, it's predominantly driven by those losses on those two projects that we've spoken about previously, the J108 project in Singapore and the Kidston pumped hydro scheme in Queensland. So maybe if I talk about each one independently, you know, both of them were awarded pre-COVID. We've spoken about that before. They've gone through all the COVID impacts, the hyper-escalation, and all the other issues that have been applicable to each one independently. The J108, since I last spoke with you or we last reported to the marketplace, has actually been performing in line with expectations. We've been meeting the basic structural completion dates, handing over aspects of the work to the customer as expected. It's been keeping in accordance with its schedule to completion and its cost to completion, which is encouraging. And I've been having discussions with the client to settle various commercial matters related to the project as well. And I believe they're all heading towards, I expect, a conclusion in the not too distant future. So feel like J108, we've got our arms around it. That's under control, so to speak. Kidston, since we last reported to the market, has just been hit with one issue after another. And quite frankly, out with the control of the project team executing the work. Queensland experienced a period of consecutive low-pressure systems that just dumped a massive amount of water on the site. That resulted in a need for us to evacuate everybody from the project site. And then it took some 10 weeks before we were able to get our manning levels back up to where they were pre the evacuation. So we had a demobilisation, a remobilisation, and even when you get your manning levels back up to peak again, you don't instantaneously return to the productivity levels you were experiencing before the demo. So that's all added cost to the project, extended the time duration. We've also had to resequence some of the major works as a consequence of a variation order provided to us from the customer where we couldn't complete some of the tunnelling works that should have been done a year and a half or so ago. We're now back doing those, so we've changed the sequence of some of the work somewhat. A lot of that's going to be subject to new claims with the client that we'll need to work through. But, of course, we've got to recognise the schedule delays and the cost issues associated with that as we speak now. Still a bit of work to do on that job, so it'll be something that I will remain pay close attention to as we work through the commercial issues and we complete the work operationally. The work, apart from the productivity hits associated with the work, is actually progressing ahead as planned and certainly getting the quality of the work and completing it as we would expect. So we just got to see that project through now and deal with it through to the end. So that's the main cause of that loss. And I do like to point out, Simon, that if we look at our portfolio of the projects that comprise the portfolio of jobs that were awarded to us post-December 22, that was after we put some additional enhanced risk processes in place. That portfolio of projects is now demonstrating improving margins as we go forward with time. So that's an encouraging part of that other part of the portfolio.
Yeah, and you make the point. And these were pre-pandemic. We live in a fundamentally different world. And the rest of infrastructure remains profitable. And you talk around a overall reduction in some state spending, Victoria, New South Wales in particular. But subsequent to year end, you've actually got some big orders coming through, $870 million Australian dollars.
Yeah, very encouraging. I guess that's one of the difficulties with defined point in time when you do your reporting is that sometimes things either happen before the reporting period or just after. But the 6 to 7 weeks after 30 June close have been very good in terms of winning new work, encouraging from a number of perspectives. That new work won is directly aligned with the strategy, the operational strategy that we've put in place for the organisation in anticipation of that reduced spend in transport infrastructure from state governments and federal governments. We were seeing the demand was going to increase in water, wastewater infrastructure, marine infrastructure, ports, support of defence throughout Australia and Pacific. We could see that that market was going to grow. And the projects that we have won over the last couple of months or so has all been consistent with that strategic direction we've been taking from in each of the respective business units. So very, very encouraging. I would like to point out, though, that although we've just won those projects, we have been working on them for a period of time. What was causing the slowdown predominantly across the marketplace was customers didn't have sufficient budget.
Yeah.
They thought that most, say, if you had a project that they thought was going to cost $200 million, when the tenders came in, it cost $300 million. So therefore, they had to go through a period of time of either de-scoping or value engineering or getting additional funding to support the project going forward. So it was nice to see them come through, because we have been working in pursuing those projects for some time.
I take the point on that, absolutely. And when I look at, sort of stand back, remove those two troubled projects you spoke at the top, you've got good cash generation. In fact, cash, the health of the group is up on the year, but some 40-odd million. You are well positioned in what is toughish, and I take your point, projects might cost more than the buyer's expecting, but Avenge well positioned looking forward.
Yes, that's right. And look, I know it's easy for me to say just forget about the big losses in J108 and Kidston, but it is important that everyone understand, have a look under the bonnet and have a look at the different parts of the business, where they are and how they're performing. And, you know, otherwise, so you do get an appropriate balanced view of what the future is going to bring for Avenge and those various business units.
We'll leave it there. That's Scott Cummings, CEO of Avenge. Appreciate the time.
Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Checking now with Brad Bendall. He's Better Bonds National Head of Sales. Brad, appreciate the time. The latest report out from your sales home loan applications in July. Strong, very, very strong. We're seeing hefty both quarter-on-quarter and also year-on-year increases. The rate cuts, I imagine, are starting to help this sector.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Really, it's exciting times. The market's starting to liven up a bit. As you said, July's applications were up 14% quarter on quarter and 12% year on year. So, yeah, it's looking really good. The rate cuts are certainly starting to affect the market, which is long overdue, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been a tough year. It's been a tough many years since those very low rates of, 21. Are we seeing price increases in terms of homes being purchased during July?
Yeah. Home prices are up they breached the 1.6 million, average home prices breached the 1.6 million mark for the first time, up 2.1% year on year. First time home buyers up to 1.3 million average. So, yeah, that's a big increase.
And 1.6, big number. I mean, where does that, I mean, and does that, is that at or around, or perhaps the sort of all-time highs for house prices?
Yeah, the 1.6 average home price is an all-time high. And as I said, the first-time home buyer average price also 1.3 million, also for the first time. So, you know, both outpacing July's 3% inflation rate, which is significant.
One of the other points that came out of the report is talking around banks wanting larger deposits. Is this banks requesting the larger deposits, or is this sort of home buyers saying, hey, we've got a bit of cash here, some more if you need?
I think it's a bit of both, Simon. Look, the banks are still have a strong willingness to lend, so they haven't changed their lending criteria at all. Mm-hmm. So could possibly be, you know, the consumer has saved a little, which I would doubt, given the fact that we've had pretty tough conditions for three odd years. But yes, deposits are up 14% from Q2 to around 311,000, 5.8% for first-time home buyers. So it's still well below 2024 highs, but this is certainly a trend to watch out for.
Looking at regional activity, Pretoria, another 27, or Greater Pretoria, 27% growth. Something is definitely happening in Pretoria. This is not the first time we've seen big numbers there. And Western Cape leading in building activity. The Western Cape, I suppose, makes sense. Pretoria is always a bit of a head scratcher, but certainly two of the booming regions.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great to be talking about a different province for a change other than the Western Cape, you know. But I think that the decentralization out of Joburg into Pretoria is certainly causing that growth. You know, you've got a big university there, so there's a lot of government employment in Pretoria. And in truth, you know, the Pretoria infrastructure, other than the actual CBD, is looking quite good.
Yeah,
you know, you've got areas like Menlyn and et cetera, which are expanding at a rate of knots. And so, yeah, it's looking really, really good. As I said, you know, Pretoria's up 27%, as you said, sorry. And the Western Cape leading with new building to the tune of 4.4 billion. So yeah, all looking good. The market's looking great.
No, it absolutely is. Are we seeing sort of more activity in certain price points? I mean, we just talked regional, but is there? I mean, maybe it's the folks buying the big fancy houses. Maybe it's the folks buying the smaller one bedroom apartments. Is there more activity in different price brands?
Yeah, look, I mean, the activity between 1 and 2 million is still strong, very, very strong, and up year on year. What we have seen is a slight shift in the home loans over 3 million. They're up 7% year on year. And then, concerningly, the loans under 500,000 have dropped by 5.7%. And that's a real concern for government targets, for bank targets, and that's entry level. So, you know, there's work to be done there.
Yeah, and Colgrave M3 springs to mind. They operate in that space. A last question. It's an interesting, fascinating point. Shifts in buyers' behavior. Rising building plans for alterations and additions, almost a third of total plans. Homeowners, some of them, certainly, we've seen great activity in the purchasing space, but that data point suggests perhaps there's a lot of sort of upgrade DIY rather than people physically moving as well.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's a really, really interesting fact, a bit of data that we've seen, you know, interest rates have come down. People have looked at, the consumers looking at renovating the existing homes rather than moving. And I think that's certainly a result of or a product of pricing and demand. So there's, you know, it's a seller's market, so they requesting sometimes ridiculous pricing. So so people are deciding to renovate instead of move. This always happens when you get a decrease in the interest rates. If you look back over time, it's a pretty standard trend. But we're certainly seeing the shift. It's going to become a buyer's market pretty soon.
Yeah, but I take your point. Interest rates down, sellers asking prices, and some folks are like, perhaps not, but also then wonder what it does for the likes of the cash pools. But we'll leave it there. Brad Bender, Better Bonds National Head of Sales, appreciate the early morning time. And our question today, poll on LinkedIn and Twitter, is around that. Are you perhaps doing DIY work on your home rather than going and purchasing a new one? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We're chatting with Jimmy Muyaha yesterday. We're talking MTN results. Profit surged off a very low base, but it's also had a very strong run. I mean, I was looking at the data as I was chatting with Jimmy, and that stock had doubled over the last year. We asked if you were holding MTN. Just over half of you said you missed the run, and I am in that group. The rest was split between, yeah, but I've taken some profits, and the others saying, yes, absolutely loving it. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.